From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. We got a great show this week. We got actor Tony Shalhoub. He'll be joining us later. Now, Tony Shalhoub is best known for playing Monk, the obsessive compulsive TV detective. So this is going to be great. We're going to put him in a room with a picture rigged so that no matter how hard he tries, he can't make it hang straight, right? We expect him to react to this by saying, "That was just a character I played in TV. Are you guys idiots?" In the meantime, we're obsessive about asking you questions. Give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Rebecca Andreessen from San Francisco, California.
Hey, how are things in San Francisco?
Surprisingly sunny, actually.
Surprisingly sunny. You're coming out of the foggy winter. What do you do there?
I actually work in political fundraising and consulting.
Political, so you raise money for politicians?
Yeah.
I sense your shame and won't pursue the topic further.
Thank you.
Rebecca, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to the man behind the world-famous podcast, Too Beautiful to Live, known as Mr. Luke Burbank.
Hi.
Right there.
Hey, Rebecca.
Next is the deputy editor and a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Kiri.
Hey, Rebecca.
And a comedian who will be performing at the Strand Capital Performing Arts Center in York, Pennsylvania, on March 12th, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Rebecca.
Yay. Rebecca, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, of course, will recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, of course, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you win our prize. Ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Here is your first quote.
It used to be you could at least look across the river at New Jersey and feel good about yourself. Those days were gone.
That's a political advisor. Named Kevin Sheekley. He was talking to Politico.com about all the scandals, corruption, and cover-ups. Where this week?
It would be in New York.
It would be New York State. This is just this week's developments in the Empire State. The governor, David Patterson, who only became governor because the last governor got caught overpaying for prostitutes. It's New York. You really can't pay retail, okay? They don't respect you if you do that. Anyway, the current governor, David Patterson, dropped his reelection bid and might resign because of a terrible cover-up involving an aide and because he accepted free World Series tickets, which is against the law. In his defense about that, and this is true, Patterson says the tickets weren't really a benefit to him because being blind, he couldn't see the game.
But he could be the umpire.
Yes. He could have umpired, yes. Meanwhile, Congressman Charlie Rangel from Harlem gave up his chairmanship after he accepted a Caribbean vacation from corporate lobbyists. And a Congressman Eric Massa is quitting amidst rumors he has harassed a male aide. That's just this week. In response, our state of Illinois reinstated Rob Blagojevich as governor, gave him a $10 million slush fund, dropped him off at a brothel, and said to him, "Win us our title back." Yeah.
At what point in New York are they just going to look at every level of government they're failing and just go, "You know what? We're turning the whole state over to Jay-Z."
Why not?
That guy knows what he's doing.
Clearly somebody in New York does. The standard, though, for New York politicians is now so low, you can get elected with a slogan like, "Only committed misdemeanors." "Rarely convicted." "Never stabbed a hobo." "Didn't."
"Out on appeal."
It's long been one of the most corrupt states in the union. I mean, just go to Albany. Think about spending a winter there. You would do anything. Right. There's not much else to do but be corrupt.
They're basically all like Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
Yeah, kind of.
It must kind of smart a bit when you realize how hard you worked to get there.
This is it?
Yeah.
This is it.
All right. Yeah, they should probably, before somebody does a run for office in New York, they should probably make them go look at Albany.
See what they think.
Yeah, maybe.
You really want to come? You want to go here?
Yeah,
yeah, really.
Exactly. It'd be like a scared straight program for potential politicians. All right, very good. Your next quote is from U.S. Senator Jim Bunning of Kentucky.
I have missed the Kentucky-South Carolina game that started at 9 o'clock, and it's the only redeeming chance we had to beat South Carolina.
Mr. Bunning was lamenting the fact that he had to stay late at work so he could do what?
Block the extension of the aid for unemployment.
Exactly right. Block a spending bill. Senator Bunning, for those of you who don't know, is being forced into retirement by his own party. And you know how you get when you get fired? You say, man, I'm going to screw the boss. I'm going to wreck this place. Well, it's just like that for Bunning, except his boss is America. Bunning's hold on the spending bill also caused the furlough of Transportation Department workers. So now all over the country, those guys who stand around doing nothing at highway construction sites were forced to stand around doing nothing somewhere else. He finally gave in, released the hold, when Democrats distracted him by sending a small child holding candy by him, and he leapt off the podium to go steal it.
That is so easy to do. Here's the thing I think for Bunning that's a little unfortunate is that you know that he was at Bullfeathers or some, D.C. watering hole with a bunch of his cronies. Yeah. And they were like, oh, maybe a couple of shots of wild turkey into it. And they were like, you know what we're going to do tomorrow? We're going to go down there and stop this thing. And they all agreed. But he was the only one who actually did it.
Yeah.
That is humiliating. Oh.
All right. Very good. Rebecca, here is your last quote.
JetBlue 171 cleared for takeoff. JetBlue 171 contact departure.
That was somebody in air traffic control at Kennedy Airport in New York City last month. As we now know, the problem wasn't what he said, but who said it? Who was it?
I have no idea.
You don't know? You can't. No. You can't guess from Carl's youthful demeanor as he.
I'm assuming it was someone under the age of 10.
Yes, it was a child, in fact.
Okay.
It was a child. You know what it's like, though. School's out. Your mother-in-law can't babysit, so you bring the kids to work. Eventually, they get bored and whiny, so why not let them give Daddy a hand? Well, one reason why not is that Daddy is an air traffic controller. And the last time little Johnny managed takeoffs and landings, there were smashed Lego pieces all over the living room. Weirdly, the pilots had no problem with the controller's kids telling them what to do. Guess their parents themselves, but the FAA did and has suspended the controller and his supervisor, which means now the kid is filling in full time, which is why so many flights at JFK have been cleared for takeoff to Hogwarts. Turns out this has been going on for some time. Last year, a 7-year-old got loose in the control tower at LaGuardia and instructed a U.S. Airways flight to land in the Hudson River.
That's what
said,
that was.
Make a
that
big splash!
Well.
Wait a minute. Boo? Really? Boo? I understand a disappointed silence. But boo? Touchy. Carl, how did Rebecca do in our quiz?
Rebecca was perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers, so Rebecca, you win our prize.
Well done, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, on Tuesday, a new law took effect, and Californians were prevented by law for doing what for this whole week?
Gee, I live in California. Bet I've been doing it over and over again. We're not allowed to, okay, except for one day a week, I think they are still allowing it, deal drugs near elementary schools. And that's only if some of the proceeds go to education.
No. That's why all the gangsters in the corner were going, oh, fiddlesticks.
Exactly.
Oh.
No, that was a hint.
Oh, they were going, no cursing.
Exactly. It's no cuss week in California this week.
By
this
law?
Decreed by law, duly passed by the state assembly. The statewide ban follows a cuss-free week in Los Angeles last year that was successful. But many residents are concerned.
What do you mean it was successful?
Yeah, how did they measure that?
This is another one of these studies that you guys get your hands on here. What do you mean it was successful?
People enjoyed it. People liked this message that it was sending to our youth.
What people?
You know, they. The people.
Yeah, they. And, you know, anybody with half a brain was out on the street cursing. Certainly didn't have time to call in and say, isn't this fun, gosh golly?
The whole thing was inspired by a South Pasadena high school student who started a no-cussing club at a school a couple years ago. Amazingly, he has not cussed once, even though he has spent the intervening 2 years stuffed in his locker.
And deservedly so.
I get so tired of the notion that somehow using a curse word leads, you know, it's like the gateway to bigger crime. Like, it's really something we need to take a look at and make sure we're not doing. There is no relationship between cursing and, frankly, anything else. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense at all. I one time was at a library in Santa Monica, and I asked the librarian to help me because I wanted to find the history of curse words, and in fact, there is such a book. And so the woman took me and showed me where it was, and I took a look at it, and I wanted to check it out because I needed more time with it. And it was, and she, I said, "Can I check this out?" And she goes, "Oh no, we would never get it back." Like, if naturally you even had an interest in how these words came into being and became so frightful that you would naturally take that next step into the crime of stealing the book. I mean, there's no relationship. And this was a librarian. This was an intelligent woman. I'm really upset for California, I'll tell you. I think this kind of law...
You didn't even know this existed 4 minutes ago.
No, but you know what? The whole state has been bothering me for a while.
You got through this entire rant without swearing, which I find impressive.
It was really hard.
I can tell.
I swear by the moon and the stars in the skies, I'll be there.
Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Zeke Rodriguez calling from Vero Beach, Florida.
Hey, Zeke, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine. Now, Vero Beach is one of the places where spring training happens, right?
Yes, up until last this year.
Oh, right. I remember the Dodgers were there, and
exactly.
They moved, right?
Yes.
After God knows how many years, 50, 60 years in Vero Beach, and they moved.
Right, right, and very much confusing the children at Dodger Town Elementary School.
Well, Zeke, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Zeke's topic?
I used to have to talk to people, but now I can just push this button.
These days, everything is automated for convenience, even when they shouldn't be. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about things being made easier that maybe should stay difficult. Your job is to choose the true story of misplaced progress. Do that and you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. First up, let's hear from Luke Burbank.
Ah, grandparents, senders of birthday cards, watchers of boring stuff on public television, not understanders of how the internet works. They've always been there for you, and now it's time for you to return the favor, or at least trick them into thinking you are. For the low, low price of $19.95 a year, the good folks at Love My Nana, based naturally in Sun City, Arizona, will handwrite 12 postcards per year, allegedly from you, addressed to that special Matlock fan in your life. Thanks to the wonders of the internet, Love My Nana's technicians can mine your Facebook page and Tumblr account for pictures and updates of where you've been and what you've been doing. Dear Poompa and Mima, we just had so much fun riding jet skis on Lake Havasu. Missed you, although your hip replacement would have made boogie boarding a real challenge. All our love. At the $29 per year level, Love My Nana will even call your grandparents on their birthday, which might seem dicey until you look at the company's lab tests, which found that when it comes to phone calls, 9 out of 10 grandparents already pretty much have no earthly idea who they're talking to, making the ruse the perfect crime.
An automated service that is nice to your grandparents for you. Your next story of things being made simpler that shouldn't be comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Everybody is familiar with the airport pat-down, that moment of closeness with a middle-aged TSA agent that is more intimate than you were with your middle school boyfriend. The Japanese government thought they had a technological fix for that. They were wrong. The government used Tokyo Narita Airport last week to test the Scanboru, a hairdryer-like implement that was supposed to use radio frequency, magnetic imaging, and hot air to pat down passengers from up to 8 feet away. "It was like 1,000 spiders crawling on my skin," said Australian J.V. Dittmer. That was mild. Others fell down and tried to tear off their clothes, or broke out in hives, or heard noises like rodents screaming. The test ended abruptly when a 78-year-old woman beat the tester with her cane. She was not charged, But government officials said there are no plans for another test of the Scanboru.
The Scanboru, automating the airport security pat-down in Tokyo. And your last story of inappropriate automation comes from Paula Poundstone.
Although the Conference of French Bishops say they don't approve of it, finally some bright young Frenchwoman has invented a pay-to-confess telephone hotline for Catholics. When the number is called, a soothing male voice says, "For advice on confessing, press 1. To confess, press 2. Or to listen to some other confessions, press 3. Of course, there's the possibility that pressing 3 to listen to the confessions of others could land you right back in the soup, requiring you to press 2 to begin your own confession again. There are no statistics yet as to the possible addictive nature of the whole loop, nor any word about the possibility of phone sex lines linking directly to the phone line to the Lord after each 30-minute session to prevent debilitating guilt buildup. The creator stresses that any really bad sins would have to be Skyped.
All right. Let's review your choices. From Luke Burbank, a service that will keep in touch with your grandparents so you don't have to. You can just go on being shallow. From Kiri O'Connor, an attempt to automate the airport pat-down, which ended in disaster in Tokyo. Or from Paula Poundstone, an automated service you can call in to confess. No booth, no priest, just you, your conscience, and a phone machine. Which of these is the real story of automation perhaps gone too far?
Well, they all seem equally plausible. I'm going to go with Paula's.
You're going to go with Paula's story about the automated confession line?
That's right.
To bring you the real answer, well, listen to this.
For advice on confessing, press 1. To confess, press 2. To listen to some confessions, press 3.
That was the automated menu with translation from France's phone line to the Lord. You are correct. You picked Paula. It was a good instinct because she had the real story. You have won our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. And, of course, a point for Paula. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
Thanks so much for playing.
Thanks for having me.
And now the game where we ask people who've done a lot to do just a little more. Tony Shalhoub is a normal guy who has become famous playing eccentric people. There was his obsessed Italian chef in Big Night, his alien pawn shop owner in the Men in Black movies. But mostly, of course, he is known as the obsessive compulsive detective Monk on the TV series of that name. That series just came to an end, and Tony has gone back to Broadway to star in Lend Me a Tenor. He joins us now. Tony Shalhoub, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Thank you so much.
So great to have you.
Well, I've long been a fan of the show, so
well,
it's a pleasure.
I'm a big fan of yours. Check my characterization. I've seen a lot of your movies and TV shows over the years. I cannot think of when you once played a normal person. Is this true, or am I not being fair?
I think you're right. I don't remember normalcy in my career.
Did you get that routine? Because I know how Hollywood works. Did you get pegged early? I need somebody kind of wild-eyed and indeterminately ethnic. Get me Shalhoub.
Somebody who worries a lot.
Yes.
Whenever I do get those roles that seem normal, something overtakes me, and I kind of try to turn them into something not so normal. So it's partly my fault.
So the initial character is kind of Mike Brady's standard issue.
Exactly. That's what Adrian Monk was, actually, to start with.
Really? And you showed up and started twitching.
I said, I think this guy twitches. And then they built a series around it.
But, I mean, the concept, I'm assuming that when they came to you with the part, they were like, well, this is this guy, and he has all these skills, but he's also kind of obsessive, compulsive, and very weird in all these ways. And, I mean, and did that, you were like, that's what I want to do.
Well, I'm always looking for something that's slightly, off-center. And that particular role was such a pleasure because I got to do comedic things back-to-back with more serious, poignant things. And it's kind of an actor's dream, really.
But by being a success in a TV series, you always run the risk of being identified with that role. So do you have people coming up to you and going, oh, I'll shake your hand. No, I won't, because I know how you feel.
Yeah, I've heard that about 6,000 times.
I can imagine.
Today.
Today.
Yeah.
Does it get tired? Were you worried about that as you continue during the series, that you were being known for this one role?
It's always kind of a risk, an inherent risk when you're an actor, and you even if it's a movie role, sometimes people just get pegged as that one thing. But maybe when I was younger, typecasting might have been a problem. Now it's any kind of casting is good. You know?
Yeah, basically you take typecasting.
I'll take anything.
You'll be stunt doubling.
I'll take fly casting at this point.
It could have been a lot worse. People could have seen you and gone like, dynamite.
That's right.
Oh yes.
That's right.
You could have a catchphrase.
Yeah, exactly.
You starred in Big Night, one of my favorite movies. For those who haven't seen it, it's about two brothers from Italy who try to open an Italian restaurant in New Jersey. And it doesn't go well, and it's about the last night of its operation where they serve the most amazing meal ever served on film.
Oh, Peter, I really don't think there's anybody who hasn't seen that.
That's true. Was that meal real? Did you get to eat it?
Well, yes. Well, a lot of the things were real. We did actually make them over, you know, the course of the making of the film. Of course, you know, while you're filming and doing multiple takes, you know, food tends to... It tends to get a little undesirable.
It wouldn't stop me in the case of that meal.
No, but I've gotten a lot of free Italian meals in restaurants from people.
Really?
People who like that. I consider it my back end on the movie.
Really?
Kind of, yeah.
This endless free pasta special.
Exactly.
Which is weird because you are not, in fact, Italian.
I'm not.
Nor.
Oh no. Yes, you're right. No, yeah. I'm actually Lebanese.
You're Lebanese from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Which is kind of like being Italian. I don't know.
I know. It's like you probably had to stand in for. You played all the ethnic characters in the school plays, I'm sure, in Green Bay.
I actually played the black characters in the plays in Green Bay.
Oh, God. Dynamite.
You think I'm kidding.
No, I'm not. I've been to Green Bay. You're totally not kidding.
Yeah.
We have one last question for you. When we have a guest on, of course, we sit down to do a lot of research to learn a lot of things about them, and instead we just play video games all day, and then right before the show go to Wikipedia. and your Wikipedia mentions a connection between you and somebody named Dan Shalhoub.
Well, Dan would be my brother.
Dan is your brother.
That's correct.
And according to Wikipedia, Dan Shalhoub, your brother, has a particular claim to fame.
Yes, he does.
Can you tell us what that is?
Well, he is the inventor of the shapoopy.
The shapoopy.
Which is a thing that all dog owners who live in the urban areas should have. It's not just a pooper scooper. It's better than that. Mm-hmm. It actually kind of, well, how can I put this?
I just want to see you navigate this on the radio.
Yes, thank you. It actually is a device that catches the poop before it hits the ground.
Wow.
Whoa.
So this is your brother?
This is my the brother that's closest to me in age.
Right.
Yes,
and what is it like living in his giant shadow? I mean, he's the inventor of the shapoopy.
It's not easy. It's a battle of egos, actually.
I understand.
No, wait. We have to back up here because I have two dogs and I need to know this. I live in an urban area. Now, do you have to position this thing?
Oh, my God.
No, your dog does that. Yes, of course you have to position it.
You have to position but it. So...
You know, it wasn't always going to be called the Shapoopy. There were many, many, there were many pitches for names for this.
Oh, tell us them all.
I don't even want to begin to go there because I know your show is classy. And
it is.
These names aren't.
It was.
I'll just start.
It was.
Well, okay, this thing.
It wasn't.
See, the thing is, it has a telescoping handle, you see, so you can extend it. It's very small and compact to carry. So one of them, we're going to call it the long arm of the log.
Yeah.
Okay, that's enough.
I love this whole family.
This never happens to Garrison Keillor. I don't know why. Well, Tony Shalhoub, we were delighted to have you here. But we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Sure, you solved crimes. But did you ever fly? I think not.
Tony Shalhoub, you played a monk, so we're going to ask you about nuns.
Okay, that makes no sense.
That's how we do. Answer two questions about nuns. You'll win our prize, one of our listeners, Carl's voice for their home answering machine. Carl, who is actor Tony Shalhoub playing for?
Tony is playing for Nancy Martin of Venice, California.
Ready to do this?
Does Nancy have a dog?
For her sake and the sake of her family, I hope she's not even listening.
Fancy Nancy's plastic basket. Doesn't really rhyme.
No. First question, Tony. First question. Some nuns in Italy got in trouble with the law last year. What did they do? A, they got pulled over going 112 miles per hour in a Ford Fiesta in a hurry to go see the Pope. B, they made so much noise at a late night cafe klatch, the police were called by neighbors. Or C, they were busted for growing hallucinogenic mushrooms.
Okay, well, I went to a Catholic school, when I was a kid. And knowing the nuns, I'm going to have to go with C, hallucinogenics.
Wait a minute, knowing nuns as you do, you thought they were growing
hallucinogenics? That's right.
That's the sort of thing the nuns might be doing?
Well, they're very spiritually oriented.
They certainly are. So your choice is hallucinogenic mushrooms. No, actually, it was A, it was speeding.
Oh, wow.
Quoting the nun behind the wheel, the police were shocked to find three nuns of a certain age in the fiesta, but we were afraid of getting there late to see the Pope. She was fined more than $500 and lost her license.
Oh, my.
It's all right. She could still fly, though. She's a nun.
Oh, my God.
Two more chances. In 2008, an Italian priest was criticized for trying to bring attention to nuns by doing what? A, holding a nun beauty pageant. B, convincing Italian paparazzi to follow around nuns because, quote, they're celebrities in the eyes of God. Or C, creating a Nun of the Month club.
Oh, my God. No pun intended.
Yeah, literally.
All right, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to go for the beauty pageant.
And you're right.
Oh,
well,
wow.
Done. The priest said that the nun beauty pageant was only intended to show their, quote, interior beauty, but the controversy caused it to be canceled anyway. All right, this is great. You have one more to go. If you get this right, you win. The Sisters of the St. Francis of the Holy Eucharist Convent in Independence, Missouri, helped out their community in an unexpected way last year. What did they do? A, they raised money for a community center by selling a Ladies of St. Francis of the Holy Eucharist Convent calendar.
Wow.
B, wearing habits and flip-flops, they chased down a robbery suspect leading to his arrest. Or C, they provided the hit Dunk-a-Nun booth at the Independence County Fair.
I'm going to have to go with the Dunk-a-Nun booth.
Dunk-a-Nun. There sits a nun. You throw a baseball at the target, the nun is dunked.
Yes.
I'm afraid it was they chased down the robber.
No.
Yes.
In flip-flops?
In flip-flops. The nuns looked out their window and saw a man hurrying by with a shotgun and boxing gloves. And they figured he was up to no good. And they chased him down and got a description and sent it to the police, and he was arrested for robbery. Carl, how did Tony Shalhoub do in our quiz?
Well, Tony needed at least two correct answers to win for Nancy Martin, but he had just one.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tony.
The Shapoopy will have to do.
Yeah.
Send her one.
I'm going to send her one.
Send her a Shapoopy. Never speak to me about it again.
Well, I'm very, very sorry that I, couldn't win this invaluable prize for your listeners.
Well, I think no one will ever remember it a moment from now.
Tony remember Shalhoub. What, Peter?
Exactly. There you go. Tony Shalhoub is an Emmy Award-winning star of TV's Monk, seen in the USA Channel. You can see him yourself on Broadway in Lend Me a Tenor. Previews start next week. Tony Shalhoub, what a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you.
Bye-bye, Tony. Take care. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl knows how to solve a problem like Maria. You just rhyme every mountain. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call. 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Before we move on, though, a little business to attend to. Last week, we made some jokes about figure skating and figure skating outfits. And boy, did we hear about it from you. So we'd like to make amends. We'd like to give somebody a chance to respond. Joining us now is a representative from U.S. Figure Skating. Joining us now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Johnny Weir on the phone. Johnny Weir, hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. You?
Oh, we're not bad. Peter Sagal here. So glad you could join us. So we made some jokes about figure skating.
Why?
Well, because most of us don't get dressed up in fantastical costumes and do pirouettes.
Well, yes, I suppose. But, I mean, just think how amazing that would be to do.
That's true. Tell us about, we also said some comments about costumes. I mean, it's something about your costume. You had a fabulous outfit. It's hard to describe because it was just so mind-blowing. I think it was your long program. It was sort of a black thing with an open sort of very deep V-neck chest and kind of pink.
Oh, man cleavage.
Man cleavage. I'm sorry. I didn't understand that was a technical term. Tell us about, Johnny, that outfit. Did you design it?
Yes, I designed it. It was actually my short program costume. And, you know, I think that's a huge misconception about figure skating is that we go out there in clothes we would wear down the street. But, I mean, they're costumes. It's all to relate to a character and a performance and choreography. And that costume, it was black and it had a black corset with pink cording and a big pink tassel and kind of porno patent left up one shoulder.
Yes.
It was excellent.
When you say you're playing a character, what character, though? I mean, if you came out like in Chaps and a Six Shooter, okay, you're a cowboy. What
yes.
were you then wearing that outfit?
Well, my characters are a little bit askew, I suppose. They're not very literal, and I suppose the character I was trying to play was kind of maybe a hot neon pink cigarette kind of falling away towards the end of its life. Maybe that's the character I was trying to portray. But you can kind of make anything out of it that you want.
That's totally what I told my girlfriend, by the way, when we watched it.
Really?
Hot pink cigarette
you
dying
saw, right?
at the very end of its life.
Yeah, I got it.
Hey, Johnny, I want to say, I watched every single night of the Olympics, and you rocked the tassel of my heart. And you got totally ripped off. You were awesome.
Thank you, my darling.
Johnny Weir is an Olympic figure skater. Johnny, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I love you guys.
Love you too. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Kiri, a visitor at a Chicago Public Schools office got a nasty surprise recently. She accidentally set off shrieking alarms in the office when she tried to do what?
Chicago Public School office?
Yeah.
She set off the alarms when she tried to do something.
She was at the district headquarters. And
district headquarters, and she... Oh, no.
Well, all she wanted to do was update her status to working over at the Chicago Public Schools headquarters.
She's did her Facebook?
Yeah, okay. She went to Facebook. Farmville residents, harvest your crops at your own risk. No sooner had Suzanne Neckerman clicked on Facebook than loud shrieking sirens went off throughout the offices and kept going off until she'd clicked away from the site. School employees told Neckerman that the alarms, which sound a lot like fire alarms, are intended as a public shaming device. When people
what?
Use department computers to visit web pages like Facebook and YouTube.
I have a 16-year-old daughter, and I am totally getting this at my house.
Well, here's the thing. The idea is, let's say we make a list of the websites we're not going to allow you to visit. Well, you know what those are, and there are workarounds. If you don't, there's something that you want on one website, well, there's probably another website that might have it.
Yeah, but there's nothing like Farmville.
I know, it's true. But if you don't know which websites might set off that horrible alarm, then you won't risk it. You'll just sit there and do your work.
Yeah, but she apparently had no idea what it was one way or the other. It didn't sound like there was... It sounded like more of a gotcha than a, hey, let's not be using these.
In retrospect, the bucket of chicken blood that dumped
yes.
over her was emotionally and physically scarring.
And probably a little too much.
Yeah, maybe overkill. Yeah.
Then she couldn't even change your status to covered in chicken blood.
Yeah.
Feeling bad.
And that's the real irony.
Yeah, I know. Luke, you can find touchscreens everywhere, your iPhone, of course, also your car dashboard, your coffee maker, you name it. Now, Microsoft, in conjunction with Carnegie Mellon University, is developing a touchscreen to go where?
Immediately, my thoughts turn to the bathroom, because that seems like an unlikely place for this kind of thing. Am I getting warm?
Not really.
Okay.
I'll give you a hint. Goosebumps are the new Pixels.
On your body?
Yes, indeed. So maybe your girlfriend complains that your phone is always glued to your ear. Well, what if it was your ear? That'd shut her up. Microsoft's latest advance in alienation technology is called SkinPut.
Oh.
It uses an armband to project buttons onto your skin, and acoustic sensors detect which button you've touched. So you can dial a phone keypad in the palm of your hand. You can play Tetris on your forearm. You can check your Facebook on your face. So at long last, the internet will be used primarily by people who are touching themselves.
You know, it might silence the disgruntled girlfriend better if she were mounted with the touch things.
So you could dial her.
Think of how depressing that relationship would be.
Yeah. Yes.
Just for a moment.
Yeah.
Should we go upstairs and I'll update my blog? Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is Shelley Raker from Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
All right.
What do you do there?
I'm a teacher.
Oh, what do you teach?
And I wasn't sure about all those disparaging remarks you were just making.
Sorry. Who were we disparaging? I don't remember.
She also invented Facebook.
Oh, we were inventing teachers. I don't know if we were disparaging teachers. We were disparaging the Board of Education. Is that okay?
Oh, okay. Oh,
all right.
That's okay.
Shelley, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. You ready to play?
I am.
All right, then. Here's your first limerick.
To recognize folks, I propose a feature all people disclose. The human proboscis is often preposterous, so take note of everyone's...
nose.
Right. Imagine a crime scene, and in come the rumpled detectives, and they shout, "I want this room dusted for prints. Nose prints." Researchers at the University of Bath in England say they have come up with a method of identifying individuals more precise than fingerprints or even retinal scans, the nose scan. Noses are unique. Each of them is special as a snowflake. And they're hard to disguise. Police are hailing the system as a great step forward. In fact, the technology is so good it can detect fingerprints inside the nose. Here's your next limerick.
Gobbling up all the green leaves in view, those old dinosaurs hadn't a clue. They tore and just swallowed, then stomach aches followed, 'cause they'd never bothered to...
chew.
Right. Paleontologists say they have some insight, finally, into the eating habits of certain dinosaurs. These were gluttonous monsters that did not chew their food. They just grabbed it and swallowed. This has inspired a new theory on why dinosaurs went extinct. After scarfing their food, their tiny vestigial arms couldn't successfully perform the Heimlich maneuver.
Why is that the funniest mental image of all time? One T-Rex trying to do a Heimlich on another one.
It's like, Bob, I can't help you. I just...
chew through my chest. Quick.
Here is your last limerick.
Cottonelle just might give me a rash, dear. Super soft stuff should be in our stash here. Put mountain goat wool on toilet roll spool. Our TP is blended with...
ew.
Mm. Rash, dear. Stash here. Mountain goat wool. Nothing?
No. I can't... imagine what this is.
It's cashmere.
Cashmere toilet paper?
Take it, Shelley.
Cashmere, British supermarket chain Waitrose, has launched a new line of toilet paper spun from cashmere. Said one spokesperson, quote, "It is indulgent, it's stylish, and it's helping provide that extra softness," unquote. In fact, we love the idea. Anyone who's ever wanted to buy their wife a cashmere scarf but couldn't afford it, here's your chance. Just make sure you remove the cardboard tube first. Carl, how did Shelley do in our quiz?
Well, Shelley had two correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win our prize. Congratulations, Shelley.
Well done.
Thank
Congratulations,
you.
Shelley. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Luke Burbank has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. Paula Poundstone and Kerry O'Connor are tied for second. Each has 2.
Oh, no.
Okay. So, we have flipped a coin. Paula has elected to go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Repairing the damage from last week's earthquake will take up to 4 years, according to the president of blank.
Chile.
Right. According to 10 new complaints filed, the fixes made to recalled blanks are not working.
Toyotas.
Right. Representative Sandra Levin has been tapped to replace blank as chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee.
Charlie Rangel.
Right. Police in Germany arrested a drug user after they found him trying to snort drugs he'd put on top of blank.
Trying to snort drugs he'd put on top of a cop's head.
No, on top of their police car.
Ah!
Because he improperly campaigned for his film, one of the producers of the movie The Hurt Locker has been banned from the blank.
Oscars.
Right. A Delta flight to Atlanta returned to the gate and was canceled last week after the flight attendants blanked.
After the flight attendants couldn't get the little kids to serve the drinks.
After the flight attendants got into a fist fight.
And they stopped it for that?
Yes.
They could have charged extra.
It's unclear what started the altercation.
They actually do on Southwest for that.
It's unclear what started the altercation just prior to takeoff, but the situation quickly degenerated into poking, slapping, and finally full-out brawl. The pilot said he had no choice but to make good on his threat to, quote, turn this plane around. Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 10 points and the lead.
All right. Very well done, Paula. Kiri, you're up next. Fill in the blank. The Postal Service announced that it is considering ending mail delivery on blank.
Saturday.
Right. House leaders said they were planning to hold the historic vote on blank before Easter.
Healthcare.
Right. Just days after the earthquake in Chile, another earthquake hit in blank.
Japan.
No, Taiwan.
Yeah,
for his first week back as host of The Tonight Show, blank interviewed Sarah Palin and Lindsay Vonn.
Jay Leno.
Right. A North Carolina man who had broken his probation by leaving the state was caught when his probation officer blanked.
Found him.
No, saw him on the Jerry Springer Show.
Oh, I knew that.
Kate Gosselin and Pam Anderson were among the celebrities named as contestants in the latest edition of blank.
Dancing with the Stars.
Right. For people who just can't get enough caffeine, blank is now offering a 31-ounce size called the 30.
Starbucks.
Right. A man in England has been fined after he was spotted walking his dog while blanking.
Driving his car.
Right. Driving alongside the dog in his car, leash out the door. Every dog owner has dreaded a walk at one time or another, but Paul Relton took it too far, holding his dog's leash through the window as he drove at low speed alongside. His driver's license was suspended for 6 months, a penalty that Relton vehemently protested, saying he didn't think his dog could hold it that long.
Well, lucky for him, the Shapoopy.
Saw that coming.
Yeah, just contact Tony Shalhoub.
I saw you extending the telescopic handle as I approached that.
You mean the long arm of the log?
Yeah. Carl, how did Kiri do?
Well, Kiri had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Kiri has taken the lead.
Well done. All right. How many does Luke need to win?
5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
All right, Luke, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. As the new law went into effect on Wednesday, same-sex couples lined up in Washington, D.C. to blank.
Get married.
Right. Doctors gave President Obama a clean bill of health, but warned that he should stop blanking.
Drinking.
No, smoking.
And drinking?
They said, no, they said he can continue his moderate alcohol consumption, but they said try to stop smoking. 2 women in England were banned from boarding their flights after they refused to go through the new blank security machine.
X-ray, nude X-ray.
Your body scanner, right.
Body scanner.
On Sunday, NBC cut away from the coverage of the Olympics closing ceremony to premiere its new reality show, Blank.
The Marriage Ref?
Right. On Tuesday, students at Northwestern University got rowdy when they were given a lecture on ethics and politics by blank.
Blagojevich?
Right. Hero pilot blank announced he'd be retiring from his job at U.S. Airways.
Sullenberger,
right. A lavish wedding between the children of 2 Indian politicians in New Delhi went wrong when a blank went on a rampage.
One is funny, and one is probably true. A cow?
An elephant. The elephant was hired to be part of the wedding, as often happens in India. But male elephants become receptive to females very rarely, once a year, and it just happened to be that day. And he noticed a female in a nearby sugarcane field, so he made a break for it, destroying the wedding, causing $300,000 in damages. In the process, sending guests scattering and overturning 20 limousines, police were able to subdue him, and this is true, when he stopped to hump an SUV. He's all excited. The happy ending... 9 months later, a truck-a-fent was born.
My neighbor has one of those. Beautiful.
Carl, did Luke do well enough to win?
He needed 5 to tie, and he had 5 correct answers. So with 14 points, it's going to be Luke Burbank and Kerry O'Connor, this week's co-champion.
Well done.
Oh, nice.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, after the air traffic controller, who will be the next person to bring their children to work. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and LendingTree, providing customers with the ability to manage their money, credit, and loans all in one place. At LendingTree.com, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Lounging on the Beach, Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. B.J. Litterman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is... Mike Shapoopy Danforth. Now, panel, who will be the next person to bring their kid to work? Paula Poundstone.
Chief Justice John Roberts will bring one of his youngsters to work, providing history with its first dissenting argument that reads, nuh-uh.
Kerry O'Connor.
Doug Berman. So next weekend you can listen to Car Baby Talk and Wait, Wait, Don't Change Me.
And Luke Burbank.
Because even a small child apparently hopped up on Sour Patch Kids could do a better job. New York Governor David Paterson.
Well, if any of them bring their children to work, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Kerry O'Connor, Luke Burbank. Thanks to all of you for listening. All of you. I am Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week in New Orleans, Louisiana. This is NPR.